I know how much it took from her to stand up and speak here. She had to do a talk one day at, what's it, Hilton or Michael House, also something around business when she was still in business, and she had this whole speech and she got to the stage. And when she saw those lights, she just went blank and she couldn't get out her words. So this is the first time in, I don't know how many, 16 years that she probably spoke. So thank you, love. I think, first of all, I must say, looking at the amount of people here, I'm highly impressed. You guys have obviously got a brilliant ability and creativity to tell your bosses where you are today, because normally up there by us, we don't get this type of turnout. Rory, first of all, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's a great honor for me to be here and to be part of this. And basically just share what God has done in our lives and the call he had on our lives. But something about, you know, when Rory came up there to us, I think that, Rory, you've been sent by God for a very specific reason. And just singing this song, I felt that you've literally laid down your life to come and set men and women free up in Pretoria, specifically for their calling. So there's a great call on your life, but I don't think you realize what you're going to do up there. And we've already started seeing God moving in many ways. So we're greatly honored to have you up there. And I want to thank you guys down in Glenridge for releasing him and sending him to us. He's going to be a blessing for a long time. Thank you so much. There's just one problem with having Rory up there. You know, one of those problems. And that is, I don't know where this came from, but, you know, the Afrikaans people, yes, somehow, I don't know if we've been taught, been taught or where this come from, but, you know, we battle to show emotion. And when we grow up... You know, I grew up like that, not showing an emotion, and I'm not sure if it's when we, you know, the ox wagons came over the mountain and we couldn't show emotion when the ox wagon went over your toe or whatever, but we're very emotionalist. So it's a great gift to have when you're in business, when you sit in a boardroom and you negotiate with somebody and they can't read your emotions. You tend to get a good deal organized. So we had this privilege of having it in a boardroom. But since Rory's been being there, we suddenly sitting Sundays crying in church. And I find myself week after week weeping. And sometimes I don't even know why. we were driving home one Sunday and my wife said, we better stop this crying thing. He says, people are going to think we're not saved or we've got lots of problems in our marriage. talking about the call of God is something that's been very close to my heart, something that has been living in my heart for 25 years. But it's also something that, although I think 25 or just, sorry, just after I was 20, I felt God called me to business, but I didn't understand it. And I went through many, many years of struggling to try and understand why in business, because it didn't make sense. Because if you want to be in God's calling, you have to be involved with the church. And for many, many years, I had this internal struggle because money was wrong, business was wrong, and it was actually immoral to enjoy making money. But God took me through a process of many, many years to try and get an understanding of what it means and what his call means for most of us that is not called to be in involved leading a church or a pastor. So the call of God is God's purpose. I think that's what we must realize. It's not our plan. It's not something to make us look like heroes. It's not something that is going to put us on a pedestal. It's his call, his plan, and it's for his purposes, not for our purposes. And a call is something that needs to be answered. When somebody calls out to you, It requires a response. And you've got the opportunity or the ability to respond or not to respond in this thing. So all of us get called by God. Not a single person get left out. But the thing is that God made it very simple. He said to us, he gave us the big picture when it comes to the calling. And he said, we need to go and make disciples. We need to spread the gospel. We need to look after orphans, widows, and the poor. And especially the poor amongst us, starting with those in our local churches. And sitting out here talking to one of the ladies, is just something came up to me. Today's widows, because of technology and medical things, we don't have, I think, like in those days, that there was a lot of ladies that were widowers. But I think our widowers today is the woman that's been left by useless husbands with children that they have to look after. And to me, I see that as widows as well. So it's our responsibility to look after them. So there's a call from God. So that's on the one side. But then on the other side, the amazing thing is God gave us gifting. And listening to Terry last night, we serve an incredible God. He calls us, so he's already got a plan. He gives you the gift to do it. He gives you the faith, and then he goes and rewards us one day in heaven for it. I mean, how amazing is that? So you don't get that in business easily. So gifting and calling goes together. To me, it's like a glove and a hand. It fits perfectly. The one cannot go without the other one. And that's where a lot of people sometimes struggle. You know, they sit in business and they might be an accountant, a lawyer, yes, they can also be saved. And there is this struggle inside you is that I've got a gift to be a good accountant or a good lawyer or whatever. How does this come back to my calling? And people start struggling with it. And I really struggled with that one. And so the two definitely goes together because your gifting is a gift from God. It's not something that you learn. You get born with that. And we see it in our children. From a small age, they do stuff that we haven't taught them, so that gift is there. So if God made us a certain way, doesn't it just make logical sense that he's going to call us where the two comes together? All right. So the challenge come in for us to find out what is our specific calling. There's this big picture calling, but each one of us falls a specific puzzle. All right, so each one of us has got something specific in this big call that we need to do. And we need to go and find out exactly where do I fit into that. Your calling is something that you can miss. It's something that people go through life. And I've seen many people at the old age still wondering what was their purpose, what are they doing on this earth, and they actually miss the call. And to me, the only way that you can make sure that you don't miss your call comes back to intimacy with God. If you're intimate with God, you're going to hear his voice. He speaks softly. You're going to hear, and then you'll hear where your calling is going to be. So it's important that, first of all, everything starts at the beginning, and that's with intimacy with God. So our call has got nothing to do with being saved. It's got nothing to do with works. Those things has been dealt with. Calling is something that comes after you get saved. The interesting thing is, calling will always involve people. I don't believe God calls us to serve the whole day, okay, or for your life. Or he doesn't call you to build this magnificent spaceship. To me, that's not a calling. That is your job or maybe your cleverness, all right? But when God calls us, a calling will always involve, in some form, people. Because God cares about people. It's never without that. Your calling is also for a specific purpose. It's not something that's random. It's very specific. It's not that you float through life and then you do this and then your call changes next week and then this week again the way you feel. Calling is something that stays. It's one message. God is not confused. He knows exactly why he's put you on this earth, what he's called you for, and he's very, very clear on that. Then there's the preparation part. You know, we all want to find out, God, what's our calling? And for some of us, God calls us, we hear his voice just after we get saved, and there's many stories in history of that where people have gone on to do magnificent things. But it's very few people like that. For most of us, we get saved, and then what then? Now we start struggling with this whole thing. What is my calling? And there's always a preparation period. There's a time that you're going to go through where God's going to prepare your life for that calling. And that preparation time is not easy. It's character building. If you look at guys like Joseph, Moses, all those guys went through a fair amount of suffering through their lives before they actually went into the purpose that God called them for. So never disregard the fact that you're going through difficult times or when things doesn't look so great in your lives. It's a time that God prepares. And I believe that God has called me specifically in business for his purposes, for godly and kingdom purposes, and I'll go into that a little bit later. But the thing is, when I felt this call in my life, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know, you know, I understand more or less what it was, but I wasn't, where do I start with this? You know, I just not even had a business at that time. I actually had to go work. My father passed away when I was 3 months in the army, so when I came out, we had absolutely nothing, and there was no money for studying, so I had to go and find a job. So having this one side picture of something that I have to do in business, but I can hardly put food on the table. But I started somewhere. And interesting enough, one of my first businesses was here in KZN, up in Richards Bay. We saw that the guys there in the industrial areas goes very early to work. Those days shifts, I think it changes around about 5 o'clock in the morning. So 4 o'clock in the morning, I went there and I sold little cups of tea to the guys for 10 cents a cup. But I did realize after 2 weeks that, you know, I'm going to have to sell a lot of cups of tea to buy a loaf of bread. So I abandoned that one. So my next step was to start a little, making little hot dog rolls on the beach there and then in the day in the town on a street corner. And I had no money, so I used to go to the butcher around the corner, you know, buy like a half a kilogram of boerewors, come and braai it, and make a couple of sausages and boerewors, sell it, and then shoot off to the butcher again and buy a little bit more. And that's how I started going. And that's where I learned cash flow, is that no business can run without cash flow. So a lot of people never come into their calling, and a lot of times I believe it's because of disobedience. You know, sometimes I speak to young, or not young people, people that's moved on and it's made some mistakes. And when you speak to them, you find out that a lot of times we all get to T-junctions. And the problem is, if we're not intimate with God and we're not close to his voice, we always choose to go the wrong way. And then what happens is we walk around this mountain until God has taught us and he brings us again to the opportunity to choose. And if you choose wrong again, you're going to go again. And some people just keep walking around that mountain their whole life. But that's a gracious God. He keeps on giving us that T-junctions. So some people never move into their calling because they keep on making the wrong decisions. And the only reason is you're not intimate with God. So don't think that you can hear God's voice, hear what your calling is, if you're not in the right place with God and your relationship with him. So for many, many years, I sat in church and not 3CI, so just make that clear. But I sat under many teachings with the struggle inside me that I felt that I have to be in business. I was successful in business. Things came easy. It wasn't difficult. I enjoyed it. And I had this moral dilemma inside me because Sundays I sit in church and whatever was preached, I felt guilty that I haven't given up, sold my house, and gone into Africa somewhere in a remote village and planted a church there. And this thing really struggled me. And I thought, but if I love God so much and I have to count for him and I want to live a life that's going to count for something in eternity, I have to be somewhere planting a church, working full time for him. And this thing really, I went literally years through this struggle because there was no answers out there. Because when you talk to or when you listen to some of the teachings and stuff, it's always about money is bad, that financially being well off is a problem. It's totally against the word. And I started pouring really my heart out to God and said, Lord, I don't understand. On one side, you gave me this call, but on the other side is, why do I feel guilty that I'm not somewhere in Africa saving people? And I felt God said to me that you can go. You can go and plant a little church in wherever, but you're going to influence that little bit. Or you can take the gift that I give to you, and you can make it possible that many, many people out there that's actually got the call to go and plant and go and teach and do that, go and come underneath them and give them the ability financially to go and do their calling. So I'm one of those guys that gets highly upset when I hear people that said they haven't made it in the business world, now they think they can go into full-time ministry. I think, first of all, that is a total insult to God, and it's a total insult to real pastors. A man that has been called to lead the church is a massive calling, far more than a lot of us actually understand. And you need big leadership. You need a man with a big heart. It's not something that where you fail somewhere and now you take that up. So don't think that if you don't make it somewhere, well, I'll go into full-time ministry. You're going to really be disappointed. So for most of us that sit here today, and I would say around about 98% of you, you know what they say, 95% of all statistics is made up on the impulse of the moment. So 98% of you that sit here is somewhere in the marketplace. You work, you've got a little business. Some of you are half or partly involved in ministry and partly in business. But for most of us, we're in the workplace. And the workplace to me is my mission field. And I feel that I'm just as much in full-time ministry as Rory or any of the guys, Nick or any of the guys, Terry out here. I'm in full-time ministry, just in a different place. All right. So that means that I've got the same responsibility to the people that I work with or that reports to me. I've got the same way that I need to live. I need to be blameless. I cannot just live wildly like the world. I have to look differently. And it's a big challenge, especially for some of you guys that sit in big corporate companies. I found that in business, it becomes more and more a black and a white situation in the sense of morals, and people just don't care anymore. And I've sat many times in meetings, and you've got your Christian hat on, and you feel that you're negotiating with somebody, and you believe that that guy is going to be honorable because that's what you believe in or what you want to do, but it's actually totally opposite. So business is not what it used to be. It's not a handshake thing anymore, and that's why lawyers are doing so well, because for everything we need, we've got a contract, and then stuff goes wrong, and then it's a fight to decide which contract was the best. So it doesn't change. It's actually very difficult out there. But to be able to live out there, you need to hear the voice of God, and you need his guidance. So being in full-time ministry out there is that we need to be normal, not weird. You know, you get some weird people, and there's a lot of things going on in the world about Christian businesses. There is no such thing. Okay, you're a Christian that is in a different mission field. You are not a Christian business. There is no such thing. So we are normal people living in normal world out there. We look differently. We act slightly differently, but we're not weird. Okay, and what I mean by that is that you know, you get, I believe in my group of companies not to employ only Christians, because if I've only got Christians, you know, it's like being in church. Who do you minister to, or who do you, you know, tell the Lord about? So you need to get a couple of Philistines into your business so that you can get a bit of a challenge. But you get weird people out there, you know, you'll see people just doing funny things, you know. I don't know why we as Christians think we have to do funny things to get attention, you know. And sometimes, you know, it's like people will stand around a water cooler having a glass of water, and the next moment somebody comes and grabs the guy's head and put him under the water cooler and try and baptize him. You know, we don't do things like that. So... the thing is, in Matthew 5:16, it actually says by just living in the light, just by being light, just by living and looking different, people will be saved. I mean, how incredible is that? So not being weird, just living a kingdom life, people actually get saved. So we need to live like that. You know, I am in business afraid, or let me put it this way, I think my biggest fear is to be in business without having God's wisdom, because I cannot be a steward something that is given to me without him having his input. So I think one of my biggest fears is to go and try and manage people or the business without him. And God is involved in the detail of our lives. You know, don't underestimate that when you walk out on a Sunday evening after the service, that from Monday to Friday at the work, God doesn't speak. He speaks all the time. He gives us ideas. He gives us input. And I cannot tell you how many times I've sat in meetings, strategic meetings, where God has put amazing ideas and concepts into my head. All right, it's just dropping your heart. I've got no qualifications. I'm one of those dumb, unqualified guys that Terry was talking about last night. So I cannot claim anything that has happened in through our businesses. So, but, you know, when God drops something into my heart, I don't jump onto the table and shout, "So says the Lord," you know. You smile, you introduce the idea, and you see and watch. And then incredibly, a couple of months later, you look back and you say, "Wow, look at this thing." And sometimes it's stuff that's gone through the world. You know, and I just say, "Where did that come from?" So God is a creative God, and he wants to be involved. So don't shut him out. You know, if you want to lead the church, you need massive godly wisdom. We need exactly that wisdom in the workplace. There's people that we work with. I have to be aware when I walk into my company or into my offices, and each one of you, you need to sense what people's issues are. You need to be able to know when to speak into people's lives, and you must be available, because people must come to you with their problems. And it's incredible to see in a company, I see all over where the little Christians or the Christians in my business, that is, people just seem that there's something different. And when somebody that's unsafe has got an issue, you can see they go and target those guys. Everywhere there's people sitting, drinking coffee, you can hear they talk about God. So we have to be close to God and listen to him so that we can have an impact in those people's lives. Then just a little bit around stewardship is that I believe, as the word says, that every single thing that we've got, your talents, to do your job, and if you've got your own business, everything is God's property. And we only steward. We only manage that which God has given us. It says in 1 Corinthians 4:2, stewards must be trustworthy. The question is, can God trust you? If you look at the word steward in Greek, it says oikonomos. You can see I didn't study Greek, eh? But it sounds nearly to me like economy. But that word means manager, overseer, and employee. So doesn't it make our life so much easier if we're employee of God? I'm a manager of him. That means I don't have to come up with all the great ideas, I can go to him for that. But at the end of the day, it's not mine. So there's a different way that we steward and that we look after stuff. So when it comes to that which God's entrusted to me, the money, the wealth, the riches, what do I do with that? And that's the important part, because it doesn't matter if you work for a salary and if you work in a company which you are the owner and you generate money, and it doesn't matter if you do a turnover of 1,000 rand a month or 100 million rand a month, the principle stays the same. And you need to understand that to be able to live out your calling, because if you don't know how to work with this, then you're never going to go into that call. So if you're in business or you work, and God has called you to use your business for his kingdom purposes, can he trust you? And the problem is, with a lot of us, we all want to say, no, we'll give out millions of rands, you know, let me just get it. It doesn't start like that. God tests us with the 1 rand. And I can guarantee you, if you can't give 100 rand away, to give around 10 million, you're not going to be able to do. Okay, the more it gets, the difficulter it gets. But the amazing thing is, if your heart is right, it becomes a heart issue, and it's no money. So when you do write out that check for whatever, millions, it actually doesn't mean anything anymore. You don't see the value. So that's important that we understand in our calling the difference between wealth and riches. Because I'm not sure if Rory mentioned it, but especially up in Gauteng, it's a self-centered life. It's about me. It's about my family. It's about our welfare, and everybody just cares for themselves. There is obviously responsibilities that we have to look after. We have to look after our old age. We can't just say, well, God will provide. You know, your faith can be how strong. You know, we need to be sensible about these things. So there is a plan for saving. There is a plan to look after the elderly. And I think if we look where the world is going, is that our generation is all looking after one or two of our parents. And it's going to get worse as it's going on, because it's not going easier there. So we need to provide for that. But there's a different way of looking at money. And I want to try and explain to you guys the way I see money, if I'm in my work, in a job, or if I'm just purely in business. There's a big difference between what we call riches and wealth. When you look at riches, or richness, it's something that is containable, and it is measurable, and there's a limit to it. So it's like a bucket that is full of water, okay? It can only take so much. When you spill it, there's no more coming. When you waste it, there's no more coming. And everybody in the world has got the ability to be rich, all right? Safe or unsafe. So there's many people out there, and let's not use people that's dead so that they can't sue us. But if you look at like a guy like Michael Jackson, probably one of the richest guys in the world at some stage, and he died a very poor man. All right, that's a typical concept of somebody that was rich. All right, got a lot of money and just wasted it away. They say that 5% of the world's population is rich. Now, you all sit here and say, well, I'm not rich. I've only got 2 surfboards. But the definition of rich is the fact that you've got the ability to eat at least 2 or 3 meals a day, and that you've got clothes to wear, not a house or a car. That's rich. That you've got some change in your pocket some stages. So all of us here falls in that bracket. But it's different out there in the world. So when we look at wealth, it's a total different picture. Wealth is the ability to create money via an asset. That's like production. You can make money. All right. Can't plant it. Won't grow. But you can make money, okay, through an asset. So to put it in a Durban concept, if you've got 1 surfboard, you're rich. Okay. And thank you, Stephen, for giving up your surfing this morning. I appreciate it for being here. If you got 3 surfboards, then you're wealthy, because now you can rent them out and you make some money. All right, so there's a business idea for somebody. Okay. So 1 surfboard, you're rich. 3 surfboards that you rent out, you are creating wealth. It's the same. You've got one house that you live in, you're rich. If you've got another flat or something that you rent out, you're creating wealth. All right. I believe God wants us to create wealth, not to be rich. If we look at what does it mean to create wealth, where does it come into our lives? Wealth is the fact that I compare it, or the picture that I see is like a river. It's somewhere, something that flows. There's a constant flow. There's an inflow and there's an outflow. And the dam has got no control. All right, so God is the source that flow, let the money flow in, and we let it flow out on the other side. The problem is with a lot of people is they start the dam, they start the river, and then they go and build dam walls, and they start blocking up the inflow. And I think Rory actually mentioned it to me the other day, is that a dam is where diseases and stuff starts growing. So eventually that water starts getting dirty, septic, and you can't use it. So the moment we put a dam wall into the river, we actually destroy what God has given to us. So God do not want us to have any walls into our rivers. So a river needs to flow, and it starts small. So don't wait in your business or in your work to start using your ability for God. And it's everything from time, obviously money, and what we give, your skill that you've been born with. And we cannot wait till further. We have to start small. So that river needs to start flowing slowly, and it has to start. And giving, when I talk about that, is not your sowing that you give your 10% to your church. That is not what I'm talking about here. This is giving what God's called us for to make a difference out there. And the thing is with a river, a small river, the more the inflow and the more the outlet, the bigger and the wider that river grows. And the amazing thing is the wider and the healthier the river, the more luscious the site gets. So there's bigger trees, nicer grass on the sites. So what does this mean? It means that the money that flows into our lives needs to flow out of our lives. But there'll be enough money that sticks to the side of the river for you to live a very comfortable life on. And the bigger the river, the more little drops will be there for you. And it actually becomes irrelevant. So, but that thing has to flow. If the majority of the money that flows into your hands gets stuck in your pocket or in your life, you cannot be used by God. And it's going to go septic. And you're going to sit and say, God, but why can I not fulfill my calling? All right, so we need to make it flow. The question I want to ask, why do we look at the church to send out missionaries? Where did this come from that it's the church responsibility to plant churches, to send people into wherever to go and do mission work, to go and train pastors in Africa and open places? Who said it's a church responsibility? And I think it's because we do not fulfill and live in our calling. Because if we fulfill our calling, all of us that is in business or in a work, that will become our responsibility. And that's what it is. And the question I ask myself is, how many people on my payroll is actually planting churches somewhere up in Africa or even in the world? How many people am I supporting that has got that call from God to go and plant that I'm helping out there? And that's the thing. And it can be as simple as a home group that starts and say, listen, here's somebody that's got the call from God to go and plant the church. We commit, we're going to support you for 2 years financially to do that. It's small money, it's easy, it can happen. All right, but we need to start somewhere. Don't think, well, I'm going to wait till God gives me billions of rands, then I'm going to build this massive church. We don't change the world with big churches. It starts with small churches. So rich people, those with the one surfboard, they don't sow, they hold on to possessions. And that's why normally that's the guys that goes bankrupt in business, because they hold on to those possessions. And money starts controlling them. Wealthy people are people that give away money as a blessing with a purpose. So it's something you give. Money is irrelevant. It must just go. All right. Because you don't, you know who the provider is on the other side. If you just look quickly at that scripture, that's something I struggled with. Where that scripture in the Bible where it talks about the rich man that Jesus said will not enter into the kingdom. And I thought, does that mean, you know, because I drive a nice car or I've, you know, can afford to go on holiday, I'm rich, I'm not going to go to heaven. And basically all that means in simple terms is that man was holding onto his possessions. And the needle was a hole in the city hall, the city wall, where camels and stuff used to go through. And if the camel had anything on its back, it couldn't fit through that little hole. So all that Jesus said to this guy is, you're holding onto your possessions. You must let go. It wasn't about giving his money away just for the sake of giving it away. He was holding on it. It was more important to hold on instead of being a river flowing. So the big thing is when God calls us into business or into our work, he calls us to fulfill that calling, but there need to be order in our lives. Without order in our lives, everything goes wrong. You could be living in your purpose, but you can actually be destroying your household or that what God has placed under your responsibility. So God doesn't work with formulas, but there is order in nature. And that order is firstly God. It's about him. It's his relationship. It's about God, the intimacy with him. That's why he created us, to be intimate with. That's why he saves us, because he loves and his grace for us. It starts with him. He has to be the center and he has to be first in everything we do. All right? Secondly, it needs to be your family. All right? It's your wife first and then your children. So do not think that you can justify late hours working continuously for year upon year and think that you're not going to have problems in your business, in your work, or at your home. Family comes after God, not work. Then thirdly is our local church. We need to be knitted in. We need to be planted. We need to be accountable. The local church for me, being in business or being out there in the world in my mission field, is the fact that that's the place where I get equipped. That's why I come to get equipped to be able to live out my calling out there. That's a place where I've got other people that can pray for me and carry me when it's going difficult out there. So we cannot live out our calling without being rooted into a strong local church. So intimacy with God, as I said earlier, I cannot afford to run my business without that. If he is the provider, if I am his steward, if I work for God literally, I need his input and his voice. And without that, I cannot steward. It is God's blessing that gives us the ability to great wealth. So it's not your cleverness. It is not your years and years of study. It's purely a blessing and a calling from God that gives us the ability to do that. Another thing for me which is so important with intimacy. Intimacy, I feel, is my protection against things like the power behind money. The thing is, the more money that God entrusts to us and flows through us, there's the constant danger that power behind the money will come and consume us, and you start holding on to it, you start losing it because there's suddenly power that goes behind it and the whole thing. And I don't want to go into that whole teaching by itself, but 1 Timothy 6:19 says, the desire to be rich, fall into temptation, and the snare will drive you to destruction. All right. The Bible will not talk about money three times more than it talks about prayer if there wasn't a massive, massive problem and power behind it that can destroy us. So money itself is immoral. It's got nothing. It's nothing wrong with money, but there's a very dangerous power behind it. And that's what the Western world is under. It's greed. It's the way that we live for ourselves. We don't care what's going on out there. So that intimacy is my protection, staying close to God, that he can tell me and warn me when I get ensnared by that. Then I've been in business for 25 odd years, and I feel my life and my preparation and suffering and building little small businesses, sometimes successful, other times not successful, to a point where I believe we're at a pinnacle point to really take that small stream into a massive river for God's purposes. But the interesting thing is that I'm no special. I'm not the only one walking around with that. God has put men around me that has had that same dream, that same calling for more than 20 years. We didn't know about each other, and we became friends, and I still didn't know until God one day dropped something in my heart that I need to pull them in. And today I'm surrounded by men that carries that same vision, that lives for kingdom purposes in their business, and I know we're all focusing and for the same calling. So the thing is, God calls many people for the same things, but each one has got that little bit of puzzle. So we don't all do the same in our business, but we all got the same heart. We're going to the same purpose. All right, so never think that there's one man, hero, or cowboy that's going to change the whole world. All right, God needs every single person of us. Uses each one of us. Being in business, being in God's calling, even if you're 100% in His calling, even if you're totally intimate with Him, doesn't mean sunshine and roses or whatever, beach and ice cream for you guys. It's going to be difficult. There is very difficult things. But the Bible talks about a peace that God gives us, that peace that goes beyond any understanding. Now, you can only experience that peace in a storm. So it's going to go difficult. There's going to be problems. So the only time we can really feel God's peace is when we're actually in that storm. And many, many times, things goes like at the moment, it's chaos out basically in the economy and in the world. But I don't panic because I know I work for a very, very great, magnificent God, and I'm just a steward. That's all I am. So if the things work out or don't work out, it's irrelevant. As long as I do the best that I can do, He's in control, I don't have to panic. We see so many times that businessmen, and I'm talking about Christian businessmen, when it goes difficult, starts panicking, make the wrong decisions, and their businesses actually fold. All right. So to live in God's call, we need to stay close to Him so that we can experience that peace. Otherwise, we're going to make the wrong decisions. I mentioned quickly around our families. For you to be successful and live out your call, we need to have order in our lives. Our families, we cannot neglect them. There is times when in your work you're going to be able to, or you won't be able to live the way that you like to, and there is seasons that it gets very busy, but it shouldn't be our lifestyle. And I see sometimes even people in full-time ministry using the excuse, of course we're busy with the things of God, we think we can neglect our families. It doesn't work like that, okay? We're first going to be accountable for our families and then for our calling and our work, all right? So very important. Your wife's or your husband is just as part of the calling. And the amazing thing is, before I even knew my wife, we've got the same heart, the same thing. So whatever God called me for, she's very similar to what we called for. We've got the same dream without discussing it, without even knowing about it. All right, so God put husband and wives normally for the same purposes together. Lastly, the thing is that God called us in business, and I believe for the way I'm in business and my partners and a lot of people that work for me, is that our business is used for God's purposes. So it's not for us, it's not to enrich ourselves. And I'm not saying that we live a poverty mindset there because of the overflow. We will live comfortably. But our main purpose of our business is for God. We believe we steward on His behalf, and therefore whatever money and profits that goes into that business has to go for His purposes. And yesterday, being there at Live Village, I was just struck again with Tish and what the guys have done there, that somebody that God has called I don't know too much about him, but I think he probably didn't have a cent on his name when God gave him that vision. But he had the faith, and he went and did what God told him. And sometimes, you know, God calls us into things, and we don't have the tools. The first time I got God's call, I had no big business. I couldn't see how this thing is going to happen, but God opens the doors. He wants us to be obedient. He's going to take us through trials. He's going to test us. He's going to prepare us for the right time. But at the right point in time, he's going to open those doors. And that's exactly what happens. And that's where the faith comes in, because things happen that is physically impossible. And I've seen it in business. In the most difficult economic climate in this country, we've got businesses that's outgrowing 40-50% year on year. It is physically impossible to do that. But when God takes control of something, when it's in his calling, he sorts it out. We don't have to worry about it anymore. So each one of us here has got that call that fits into the big picture. You need to go and find out, where do I fit into that? And even if you're in a workplace, there's going to be a part of money has to flow. I think paying money out or giving is purely as a total reflection of God's character. If you look at the Bible, says we were created in God's image, in his character, all right? So Jesus' whole life was about giving, and he gave the ultimate price. Shouldn't our lives look the same? Shouldn't it be something of giving? So there is going to be giving of time. But I think there's nothing more that tells somebody of maturity is giving of money, because we can feel it. It's easy to give time sometimes. But when you take money, when you cut back on something, those wants, and you rather put it into God's kingdom or for his purposes, that shows commitment. And it's sometimes, I always say that as we mature as Christians, the easier it becomes to give. You can always see when a pastor teaches on money or talk about money, who's the guy that runs first to afterwards come and challenge him, all right? It's the immature Christians. It's those guys that do not understand what it is to give, all right? So next time, watch out when you come forward when someone talks about money. But we created in God's image. That means we need to live a life of giving, because that's what we look at. And the incredible thing for me is, if you look at people's lives, when God saves you, how many people start suddenly this desire of just want to give? It's because Jesus says the longer we walk with him and the more mature we become, more looking like him, and that's why we want to give. All right. So if you're not at that place, then you really need to go and test your heart and really pray into that, because we need to live where we just want to give. We need to live generously. Money needs to become to a point where it's purely a heart issue, that the value should have absolutely no meaning whatsoever in our lives anymore. 1 John 3:16 says, proof that we love God, it's basically proof that we love God is when we give. There's a scripture in, don't think I've written it down here, that says, God says, I've heard your prayers and I've seen your giving. In same one sentence. So it's important to God. So we cannot hold on to ourselves. Our calling has to be somehow involved into giving. Okay, it has to involve people. It has to have to change lives. Hebrews 13:16 says, it pleases God when we do good. So we need to start somewhere. So when we look at our calling out in a business place, each one of you that sits somewhere in a job, you are called for something specific. You need to go and find out what it is. And as I said, it will involve people. It will involve giving. But it can be your gifting, your talents that you've got. It doesn't mean you have to leave your job and go and do something. If we were all tomorrow leave our jobs and go and plant churches, there will be no money to sustain it. Okay? So God didn't expect every single person to go and plant churches. He gave a lot of us the ability to create wealth, to create money, but we cannot live for ourselves like the Western world does it. We need to give. So in closing, it's part of God's character. So as Christians, we want to and we have to live a life of generosity. We are accountable to use our talents and our gifting to live that way. We need to break down those dam walls. Let it flow, because if it doesn't flow, the rivers can't get bigger. And the thing is, no calling is insignificant or small. All is equal. Doesn't matter if you're the guy that translated the Bible into English for the whole world, or you're that person that goes and help to change one life of a child at Live Village. It's irrelevant. If you live in your calling, you will be rewarded by God, and that's all that God asks us. Find out what it is and live it. It's nothing is irrelevant to God. Thank you.